The Monty Show, Wednesday, November 7, 2018. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Can you speak up? Because Jake blew my ears out with the music before the show.
Are you still in one piece? Because I almost made you fall out of your chair. That was pretty gnar.
You're a jerk. Anyway, speaking of jerks, Le'Veon Bell is playing basketball at 24-Hour Fitness. Amongst NFL headlines, Dez has a job with one of the best teams in the NFL. We got top five, bottom five. The Monty Show NFL Power Rankings. Heinz, like the food company Heinz?
Yeah.
Put ketchup and mayo in a bottle and is selling it as mayo chup.
No,
I don't understand it. That's fry sauce for all my Utah friends.
Bro.
It's disgusting. Trump was off the rails today. LaMelo Ball could play at UCLA. The Lakers get a boost in the middle. Bryce turned down a lot of money from the Nats. And we should probably just not talk Cubs. Like, do you have funeral music over there to blow my eardrums out with or something?
We're in the off season and something bad has happened with the Cubs. How?
They just are what they are.
Okay.
Anyway, did you restart the song?
Yeah, I tried to pause it, and we're having technical difficulties today. Yeah, you know.
Don't say we. It's
It's actually we because we tried to do this one time, and the thing wasn't plugged in, so it didn't record. And then we had to do take two, and now we're here.
I don't make mistakes ever. I didn't plug the USB cord in. Anyway,
okay.
Follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. So you didn't see, you have a real like big boy job.
Mm.
Donald Trump was crazy today. He was absolutely crazy today. I'm excited to talk about that. Yesterday, by the way, I did get a call from the Secret Service.
Really?
About your Donald Trump burning thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people mentioned that to me. My sister-in-law sent me a Snapchat about it. She said she no longer wants to come to Thanksgiving because she's concerned.
Oh, well.
Like,
get that red-ass hat out of here.
I got DMs on Twitter over it. Like, people were like, well, what happened? What do you mean? He said he should burn. I'm like, it's not literal. He didn't mean it literally.
Not like fire. I mean, the comment was fire, but
no,
never mind.
That was
never mind.
The comment was stupid is what it was.
Never
anyway.
Mind.
Can we just talk sports?
Yeah. Man.
I got that comment
today,
too.
Donald Trump is a sport.
I got that comment today, too. It's a sports show. Why don't you just concentrate and talk about sports? What do you know about Donald Trump? MAGA. Anyway. every Trump supporter has to throw that in.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Acosta's a dick. MAGA. Like, it's... Come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He melted down on Jim Acosta today. If you
Round
haven't seen
two.
It, it's on my Instagram and Twitter feed, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show on Twitter and Instagram. It was classic. All right, time for top five, bottom five in the NFL. We do it every Wednesday on the show. We give you our power rankings. You can't, it's like saying Metallica. You can't just say Metallica.
Yeah.
It's Metallica. It's power rankings. You can't just say it normally. Let's start with the top five teams because there was a huge change in the top five this week. We'll start with the fifth best team. The San Diego will never be Los Angeles Chargers are 6-2. And here's something that I was pondering today as I was putting together the top five teams in the Chargers. Jared Goff and Todd Gurley or Philip Rivers and Gordon.
It's very close.
It is very close, like really close. The reason that the Saints beat the Rams, one, the game was played in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And and we'll talk about this in a minute, but my feeling is if they play that game in LA, the Rams probably win it. But Melvin Gordon is pretty much a stud at this point. And him and Philip Rivers, who I think is playing some MVP caliber football at this point, I don't know how you don't have him in the conversation. It's pretty close. And it's remarkable that both teams in LA now are in the top five teams in the National Football League.
Yeah.
With all the turmoil and tumult of the Chargers playing in a soccer stadium.
Yeah.
It's pretty shocking that they're this good. They're 6-2, and I think they're the best team in the West next to the Chiefs, who I also think if that game's played in L.A., now it'll be all Chiefs fans, but The Chargers have a legitimate shot to I think beat the Chiefs. I think that is absolutely possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Chargers are in every game that they play, right? I mean, that's how good they are this year. But I think when we talk about comparing Rivers and Gordon, you know, to Goff and Gurley, I think it's a stylistic difference, right? Like Melvin Gordon can run over you, he can run around you, over you. Where Todd Gurley is much more of a finesse guy, in my opinion. He needs the ball out in the flat. He needs to have space to run and stretch his legs. If you give him that, he's dynamic. He will make things happen. But if you just give him like a yard of space, he's not going to do too much for you. And I think when we talk about why they lost to the Saints, that was one of the biggest reasons why. Todd Gurley didn't exactly go off in that game.
Yeah, he got shut down.
Yeah.
Under 100 yards combined is shocking. And I'm really looking forward to December 13th in Los Angeles when it's Chiefs and Chargers. And we'll see. My guess is that, you know, Patrick Mahomes is probably going to win the MVP. Because he's been that fantastic. Now, we're only halfway through the season, but he also gets, like, this week they've got the Cardinals, but then he's got the Rams.
Yep.
Then he gets the Raiders, but then he's got the Ravens, then he's got the Chargers and the Seahawks. So it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. But I put the Chargers at number five. They're 6-2, and I think they are one of the better teams in the National Football League. And it'll be really interesting to see if they can catch the Chiefs in that division. They'll need some help. At number four, well, guess who? It's the Kansas City Chiefs. They're 8-1. And I really struggled not to put the Chiefs in the top three. But I think when you're talking about the three teams ahead of them, you're going to quickly understand why they're fourth. They're 8-1. As I said, I think Patrick Mahomes is likely the MVP of the NFL right now. But they were really unimpressive against the Browns. Now, I know they won 37-21, but the defense in Kansas City worries me a little bit. They gave up 23 to the Broncos. You give up 43 to the Patriots.
Yeah.
You see that they've been exposed a little bit. And even in the Broncos got 23, the Niners got 27.
Yeah.
37 to the Steelers, 28 to the aforementioned Chargers. Their defense makes me a wee bit nervous.
Yeah, the defense can be had, and that's really the only weakness on the team. And it's not to say that they have a bad defense. They just don't have a dominant, dynamic defense.
Yes,
you look
correct.
At the Patriots' performance against them, and going into that game, what were we talking about? I specifically mentioned the fact that the Patriots are going to spread them out, they're going to go down the field, and they're going to give Tom Terrific many different options to choose from. And you're going to have to make the safety in the middle of the field make a choice. And anytime you give Tom Brady, Rodgers, Rivers, any of those great quarterbacks that kind of situation, they're going to dominate. They're going to shred you up, and we saw for 43 points. So the question for me is, and the question for Mahomes is, and in this MVP campaign is, can you score more points than the opposition? Because it's not going to be a low-scoring game, as we've seen the whole year. So I think for the Chiefs, that's their style of play. You've got to go down the field, and you've got to score a ton of points because you know whoever is on the other side is going to do the same thing. So Mahomes can't have a bad day. He can't have like a one TD, three pick kind of day. He's got to perform every week. And I think if he does that, they're going to win a ton. But if he has a bad week, they're not going to be in a good place.
Yeah, and I think they're doing a pretty good job of getting after the quarterback, just looking through the Pro Football Focus numbers. But that's really the only thing they do well. They don't cover well. They don't tackle well. And overall, I want to say, off the top of my head, I want to say that they're probably a bottom 10 defense. I put them, with the Giants, the Falcons because of all the injuries. Like, I kind of put them in that ilk. Although the Falcons today with Bruce Irvin, that's a really nice pickup for them and a big loss for the Raiders. But that's why the Chiefs are number four. They're 8-1. Mahomes is fantastic. I get it. That defense makes me a little nervous. Number three, well, it's the New England Patriots. They're 7-2. They've got a win over the Chiefs. And the thing that's so impressive about the Patriots is they won without Gronk and Sony Michel versus a pretty solid, not a good or great, just solid Green Bay Packer team.
Mm-hmm.
And they're winning with defense. And that's the thing that really is starting to show up about the Patriots, that this is a, I don't know, dare I say that this is a top five defense in the NFL. I would certainly put them with the Bears and the Rams. The Vikings, the Jets, they're right there with all of the better defenses in this league. So I think the Patriots are playing really good football right now.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, the first 5 weeks we were wondering, well, is this the year Tom falls off? Is this the year the Patriots aren't going to be the Patriots, right? Like, we're all waiting for that year to come. I got bad news for you guys. This isn't the year, right? They're having another good Patriots year, and it's funny. I always think about this once we get to the midway point. The Patriots are starting to separate themselves mentally, right? They're beating you with mindset. They're beating you with the mental edge in a game. That's how they beat the Chiefs. That's how they beat several other teams, including the Packers. So yeah. I think anytime you think about the Patriots, just understand they're going to outthink you and they're going to beat you the way they want to beat you.
And by the way, the fact that Bill Belichick was mic'd up this week was phenomenal. The things he was so nice and so complimentary of Aaron Rodgers all week long. Like, he said nice things about him leading up to the game. During the game, he was killing him. Oh, he's throwing balls up. We're going to get one of those interceptions. Keep him in the pocket. Don't let him scramble.
Yeah.
He was all on that about Aaron Rodgers. I thought that was fascinating. The Patriots are 7-2, and they're the third best team in the NFL. You already know who the top two are. Number two, for the first time in 6 weeks.
Yes.
The LA Rams are not number one. They're number two. And this was the thing. The Saints are obviously number one. I think they're interchangeable, but now you went to New Orleans and lost. I only dropped them one spot to number two because, I think if this game was played in L.A., the Saints probably win. Or the Rams probably beat the Saints. The Rams probably win, excuse me.
Right.
So that's why I make the Rams number two. They're 8-1. But here's the thing. I think they miss Aqib Talib terribly. And the coverage in that secondary, you're beginning to see that they're struggling. And one of the things that I think is not helping is Ndamukong Suh. And Ryan Clark was on ESPN Radio on the Football Frenzy with me this weekend. And I asked him, you know, do you see an impact out of Ndamukong Suh? And he agreed with me that there's not been an impact worthy of the money that Ndamukong Suh is making. And at some point, Ndamukong Suh's got to be something other than an afterthought. He can't just be a guy that eats space. He has to be a dominant force. And I don't think he's been that for that defensive line.
No, and I don't think he hasn't lived up to it, right? Like, we know that. But at the same time, he has it in him. And that's the biggest fear, I think, when you play the Rams. You know somewhere in there, Sue has that in him, and it can come out at any time. Now, it hasn't yet, and they're paying the price for that. But at the same time, it's not as though him being an afterthought, let's say, on that team is really punishing them. I mean, they're having a great year. Yeah, it would be nice if he was living up to it. Right now, he's not. But if he does, they're going to be in a great place.
See, and I think they're different than, let's say, the Bears. The Bears have plummeted in pass rush rankings because Khalil Mack hasn't played. He's been hurt. I think they rested him by design against Buffalo, and I totally understand that. They didn't need him. But now I think you're going to see them come back up because anytime Khalil Mack's on the field, he's going to be felt. Yes. And Ndamukong Suh is not, his presence is not going unnoticed, but it's not being felt.
Yeah.
He's not a superstar at this point. And I think that's a problem. And I think Peters is the game-winning touchdown to Michael Thomas was a huge miss by Peters. And he at least he owned that after the game. He said, hey, I have to do better than that. He mistimed a jump to tip the ball. He should have just played coverage, and if he'd have run with Thomas, he probably breaks that pass up at the very least, maybe intercepts it at the very best. But I think there are some cracks in the wall that is the Rams' defense right now, and I think that's why they wound up losing that game. They're the second-best team, the LA Rams, in the NFL. And our top team in the NFL, of course, is the New Orleans Saints. They're now 7-1. And I think Breeze to Thomas is one of the best connections in the NFL. And then today you add Dez Bryant to that mix. He's the perfect fit in that offense. Are you surprised the news came out today that he actually turned down the Cleveland Browns and a lucrative offer from the Ravens? He held out. He wanted the perfect situation, and he found that the New Orleans Saints were the perfect situation.
Wants to win. That's what he wants. Yeah. And he was close to winning. Or I would say maybe he wasn't close to winning with the Cowboys,
well,
they
but
were
they had
several good teams while he was there, and that just didn't work out for him. So no, I'm not surprised. I mean, you know, he was on Hard Knocks. I mean, we saw him swagging into the Browns facility, but yeah. I mean, it just it just wasn't – that doesn't feel like home for Dez Bryant. He is – he will be really good for the Saints. He's a dominant receiver. What I will say, though, what's awesome is he's going to have – you know, he's got time to get back into game shape. That's great. You've been working out and doing these things, but you got to get into football shape
now. Well, and I think one of the things that also stands out is they don't need him to come in and be their best receiver. If he'd have gone to Baltimore, he would have needed to be their best receiver. Because right now their best receiver is John Brown, who is having a great year, as you disagreed with me yesterday on the show. I think John Brown's having a great year. But he, you would expect Dez Bryant to be better than that. And Dez Bryant is not that receiver anymore, I don't think. I think he is a beast physically. And we'll see. Maybe that top-end speed comes back and he's going to be that guy again. But I have a feeling he's going to be a run-after-the-catch guy for them. Because you already have Michael Thomas, who's a game-breaker. And you have Kamara, who... frankly, I think is the best offensive player in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the dynamic on the team, you make a good point. John Brown is your deep threat right now, and he's having a good year. He's doing everything you need him to do. Michael Thomas is your everything guy, and Kamara's having a really – he's just dynamic. He can do whatever you need him
but
to do.
But that's why I say if he had gone to Baltimore,
he
would – they need – in Baltimore, they need somebody that's a little better than John Brown.
Yeah.
So Dez would have had to be – better than John Brown. And again, I think John Brown's having a great year for Baltimore. And I want to keep saying that because I know I've put a lot of hate on the Cardinals. Right? But John Brown for the Ravens has been a completely different guy.
Yeah.
But Dez would have had to be better than him. Going to New Orleans, Dez doesn't have to be better than anybody. He just has to be himself. And I think that's huge. I think Breeze getting him the ball is huge.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think he went there because he has a chance to win a ring.
Yeah.
So our top five teams are the Chargers, the Chiefs, the Pats, the Rams are number two, and the Saints are the number one team this week in the NFL. Now, the bottom five also saw some changes, but the names are largely the same. The Arizona Cardinals are the fifth worst team. They're the fifth worst team in the NFL.
It's impressive.
It is impressive. They're moving up in the world. they only beat the Niners. They've got two wins, and it's both of them are against the Niners.
I was surprised by that, by the way.
Yeah. The reason that they're just terrible, like Sam Bradford got released this week. They owed him, they paid him a ton of money to play like two games or something like that.
Bro, I got a hand it to Sam Bradford, man. I mean, the guy is always hurt, and he just seemingly has made so much money in his career.
But he hasn't practiced in 5 weeks, and the Cardinals let it leak that... Yeah, he's got no cartilage in his knee, but I'm just curious, why didn't you put him on the injury report then? He never appeared on their injury report.
Yeah.
But he wasn't practicing because he was injured. It's an odd situation. And the whole deal about Byron Leftwich being elevated to offensive coordinator, and it'll be interesting to see how they finish if they make any improvement at all. This team's not going to change or improve until the offseason, and they're only going to change and improve if Steve Keim is fired as a GM. It is that simple to me. That's why they're the fifth worst team. The fourth worst team is the New York Jets. They're 3-6, and right now it is said that they are going through a player revolt. And the only reason that they're as high as the fourth worst team is because they actually have a lot of talent. They have guys who can play football. But they've got to fire Todd Bowles.
Yeah.
Like the players are openly questioning what's going on there. Guys are quitting on him. I don't know why they have not fired him at this point. And then the news today that Sam Darnold is wearing a boot because he's got a severely sprained foot.
Yeah, it's rough. It's absolutely rough. And I think, you know, before this injury happened, we were already talking about, well, is this guy even a long-term option at this point? I mean, he just hasn't valued the ball, and he's just been awful.
But isn't this the Dak Prescott conversation we had yesterday? For Darnold, I think it's one of these things where you won't know who he is until he has an offensive head coach.
Yeah.
Todd Bowles is a defensive guy. So let's say you go out and hire the best available offensive coach, right? And he still sucks? Then you start looking at Darnold. But I think there's a lot in that coaching staff. I think there's a lot in that system.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder, well, is it Sam or is it the system? So I think it's a little early, but my question is, how much damage is being done to Darnold right now because of the player revolt? Because right now he's learning to be a professional football player,
yeah,
and it's not going well.
Yeah, and this is these are all the intangibles, all the little things that we talk about with someone like Pat Mahomes who had time to sit. You know, that this... This is what you don't get when you just go right into the fire.
Correct.
You got to learn on the fly. You got to go through all this. So you make a great point. I mean, why haven't you fired the head coach? The players are revolting. They're quitting. There's a bunch of drama. And on top of that, he's got a ton of interceptions to not a lot of touchdowns. So I just think he's not in a great place. But if they can bring in a new coaching staff for next season and give him some concrete to play on, if you know what I mean, I mean, he'll get better. He should get better.
You would hope that he would get better. I think the Jets are a terrible organization.
Yeah.
Sadly, though, they're not the worst team in New York. That would be our number three. The third worst team in the NFL is the New York Football Giants. The Giants are 1-7. And this week, what I find so fascinating about the New York Giants is that I think that Eli Manning would be out of a job right now. I think he'd be on the bench if Kyle Lauletta had not gotten into trouble with the police. If he had not been out, if he had not been late to practice, if he had not gotten pulled over.
If he had been a professional.
He would be the starting quarterback of the Giants right now. But now, instead, they're shellacked and stuck with Eli Manning. So my question is, why did you only give Saquon 13 carries against the Washington Redskins?
No idea.
This is my struggle with the Giants. You have one of the best, bright, young stars in the NFL in Saquon. Give him the ball. You can't throw the ball. Eli apparently is dead. Like, he is no longer amongst us, but he still plays quarterback for you. Give the ball to Saquon Barkley, you know, and throw after your run game is established instead of throwing to establish your run game, which never works for them. They're not good. And I don't know how you fix this. Because you hired a head coach who was supposedly an offensive guy, and they've been awful. They have one win, and they squeaked it out against the Texans in Houston. They're going to play Monday against the 49ers, and you hope that that's a win, right? You would think that that's a win, but then it's Tampa and Philly.
Those aren't wins.
The Bears.
That's not a win.
Washington. An upstart Tennessee team that who knows what they'll be in December, Indianapolis, and then at Dallas to finish the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the Giants, you just have to keep it simple. I mean, you're right. Hand it off, establish the run, be committed to the run, and whatever you get after that is you know, icing on the cake.
I think there's
man.
A chance they go 2-14.
Yeah.
That would be horrendous, and that's why the Giants are the third worst team in the NFL. The second worst team in the NFL, the Buffalo Bills. I don't know who the starting quarterback is either. Because right now it should be Colin Kaepernick, if we're being honest. It's not. It's Nate Peterman, who shouldn't be starting for anybody. And this is the thing. Peterman was not at fault last week. And I almost struggle to say that out loud. It's crazy. The interceptions he was credited for last week were almost anything but his fault. It's guys falling down and bobbling the football and popping it up in the air, and it goes for a pick six. And the Bears defense is opportunistic, and it feels good to say that as a fan of the coach and the Bears. It feels good to say that.
Yeah.
But Peterman's terrible.
Yeah.
They're bad. The Bills are embarrassingly bad.
Yeah, you're not doing anything to improve. Like, you're defining insanity right now, man. You're not doing anything to get better. You're just running the same guys out there and expecting something called improvement, and that's not going to happen. Like, you've got to change something, whether it's the coaching staff, your quarterback, like, something.
So you've tried Josh Allen, your rookie. You started Peterman, he was terrible. Josh Allen came in, he was okay. Right, he had the Minnesota game, great, injures his elbow. Then you bring in Derek Anderson because Peterman's embarrassing. He gets a concussion, you put Peterman back in, and you suck all over again. And now it looks like they're trying to get Josh Allen back because he's limited at practice now. He's actually throwing a football again. Derek Anderson, who they signed off the street, still has concussion symptoms and will not practice this week, it doesn't look like.
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about their defense. We don't need to talk about the fact that they're playing the Jets this week, and you would hope that they would get a win. Probably not, because the Jets are actually decent defensively. But they, I don't think, are going to win another game the rest of the year, the Bills. I really don't, unless Josh Allen plays and plays well, and that's why they're the second worst team in the NFL. Come on, you know who the worst team is. The Oakland Football Raiders.
Yeah.
They're awful. This is the worst team by a lot, and I just keep saying that it's the players they let go who are very good for other teams. This week's addition is Bruce Irvin, who today signed with the Atlanta Falcons. in what I think is a great pickup.
Because they needed it.
The Falcons are on the way back, friends. Like, they're getting healthy. And now you put Bruce Irvin into that pass rush. Now you have choices. Now you have schematic flexibility. You can line guys up in different places. You're not predictable anymore. Like, the Atlanta Falcons are coming at the right time because their schedule is not going to be kind. And you plug Bruce Irvin into a pass rush that is 29th in the NFL.
Ugh.
The Atlanta Falcons pass rush, that's what I said, is 29th in the NFL.
Awful, man.
Oh,
awful. Well,
but they've also had a ton of injuries, so they've had to play a lot of two deep and a lot of nickel and dime.
Yeah.
So you're not going to rush the passer in those sets. Well, now they have some flexibility because, A, they're getting healthy, and they add Bruce Irvin. So I actually think the Atlanta Falcons have a chance to be decent. The problem is their schedule is a grinder. It's the Browns this week. You hope they win. Cowboys, Saints, Ravens, Packers, Cardinals win at the Panthers and at the Bucks. Their schedule is not easy.
I mean, there's a lot of
winnable
games in there. Yeah, that's a tough schedule. I mean, it's not a cakewalk or anything, but it's not as though you're playing the best teams in the league every week.
But you're 4-4 and you're 3 games out in the division. You cannot afford to bobble at all anymore.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult. But why are we talking about the Falcons? We're talking about how crappy the Raiders are, and they are crappy. Nobody seems to know if Derek Carr's their future quarterback. Their bye weeks are a disaster, and now Bruce Irvin's gone, and they took an ugly loss to the 49ers?
Yeah.
Like, I was watching that. It ruined my trip to Hawaii. My wife was actually feeling good about the 49ers.
She was not amused.
Well, she stupidly picked the Raiders. Oh, wait, I told her to pick the Raiders. Anyway, the point is, it was not good. She was really happy the Niners won because she's a psychophantic 49er fan. But she was really upset that the Raiders lost, and it was my fault that she lost. But she's still tied for first place in the pick'em pool that our family has, so it's kind of embarrassing. Anyway, the point
okay.
is, I'm not in first place. I'm like 10 games out of first place. I haven't even looked at the standings. I've been terrible picking NFL games. But anyways, I still have my good looks and my youth.
Yeah.
The point is, listen, the Raiders are awful.
The definition of a dumpster fire. You're selling off your talent.
No,
you're not.
Donald Trump's press conference today. I'll stop. Yes, the Raiders are a dumpster fire. Yes, they're the definition of selling good players. But I also think that they're married to John Gruden for 10 years. And I think he's actually got a plan. He wants his guys.
Yeah.
And he wants to remake this roster in his own, you know, resemblance.
Yeah.
In his own likeness.
Vision.
Into his, I think the best word I can come up with is vision. So I think, see what I did there?
I saw that.
Anyway,
yeah, I appreciate that.
Because you have vision. Anyway, the point is the Raiders are terrible, and that's why they're the worst team in the NFL by our standards. Here on the Monty Show, the 5 worst teams are the Arizona Cardinals, the Jets, the Giants, the Bills, and wow, the Raiders are terrible. Top 5, bottom 5 every Wednesday on the Monty Show. Let's talk about Le'Veon Hooper Bell. Okay, so first of all, let me update you. Le'Veon Bell still is not reported. If he reports by next week, they will owe him $20 million next year if they choose to franchise tag him. If he does not, they'll only owe him about $14.5 million. He's given up $800,000 a week this season. There's no way he's ever making all this money back. It's just not going to happen. So I guess I understand why then you've given up like a ton of money, $800,000 a week. So the natural reaction would be to go to LA Fitness and play pickup basketball with a bunch of average dudes. Le'Veon Bell was videotaped playing pickup basketball at LA Fitness in Pittsburgh this week. Like, how stupid can you be?
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about the definition of risk. Like, you're holding out losing money. I would even say giving money away for a cause you think is right. And you're risking your health?
You don't have a contract. And so you're out there playing pickup basketball. If you blow your knee out or break an ankle or any of the things that generally happen playing pickup basketball, you're out the money. It's over. And then you start tweeting out tweets that are written upside down, telling everybody that you know what you're doing and don't worry about me. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about you. I just don't know what you're doing. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
At this point, if you're the Steelers, why do you want Le'Veon Bell back? Because can you really make the argument that he's your starting running back when he returns?
No. No, you can't.
Right?
And Connor's been good.
Good. He's been excellent. And they're, you know, pro, again, because I'm a subscriber, Pro Football Focus put out a bunch of metrics that say he's performed pretty much on par with Le'Veon Bell. And I don't know that they, quote unquote, need Le'Veon. You always need somebody of that caliber. But they're not going to put him in and be the number one.
No. No.
It's going to be awkward when he comes back.
Yeah, I mean, they don't, to your point, they don't necessarily need him. It'd be nice to have you, yes, but they don't need him. They're not, you know, bending over backwards to sign the guy.
Yeah, and by the way, they've got a one-game lead over the Bengals, your favorite redhead.
Go Andy Dalton.
Is it a thing where you just were abused by somebody wearing like a Cabbage Patch Kid t-shirt or something when you were a kid? Because what is your deal with redheads?
I'm not a fan of guys who never perform in the clutch and do their job.
Andy, what was the name of the redhead, Raggedy Ann? Raggedy Ann and Andy? Yeah,
hello.
Raggedy Ann and Andy. Andy Dalton. Raggedy Ann and Andy Dalton. You're so young. Anyway, the point is, I'm old. The point is, I think you're in big trouble if you're Le'Veon Bell. You just need to sign that tender and
get it done with.
Yeah, bite your tongue. Because you've still got the money you're going to make this year remaining. Just go make your money and then figure out what happens in the offseason. It's remarkable to me. Make sure you find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Before we get to LaMelo Ball shocking the world today and Major League Baseball, can we talk about combining ketchup and mayonnaise? Mayonnaise! Boy!
First of all, do you do mayo on your burger?
Only at Jack in the Box. And only because, and this is very apropos, I haven't eaten at Jack in the Box in some time.
Yeah.
It's been a while. But I'm on this don't eat meat kick right now. Like, I'm really trying hard not to eat meat. And it's difficult. I love to eat meat. That came out wrong. Anyway, the point is,
hello.
I love steak. I love turkey. I love chicken. Rotisserie, put rotisserie chicken down in front of me, that bird's got no chance. Like, my wife is all about this quick cook thing now, this Instapot.
Pressure cooker.
Same thing. She put a whole bird into the Instapot, and it cooked in like 45 minutes, and it was delicious. It was incredible. Like, I could eat that every day, all day. Costco hot dogs every day, all day. I was really good at Costco today. I did not eat a hot dog. Well, that's not true. I had one. The point is, Costco hot dogs are amazing. So mayo on hamburgers. At Jack in the Box, the ultimate cheeseburger, yes, with mayonnaise, mustard, and ketchup, and it's like dripping on your nice shirt and stuff. That's how a burger should be. But in Utah, having lived there, and it's my favorite place I've ever lived, by the way, they have fry sauce, which is mayonnaise and ketchup. So I'm walking through the grocery store today in Heinz, that, you know, like Heinz Field, like Heinz ketchup. They now have a bottle that has ketchup and mayonnaise in it together. It's called Mayo Chup.
Come on.
Otherwise,
that's the best you could do, Mayo Chup?
Otherwise known as fry sauce. I don't get it.
Help me. Like that name is awful. Mayo Chup? That's the best the marketing team could do?
I guess. And that's the thing. I don't understand it. I don't quite. What is the attraction to this?
Like, people love that stuff, man. I've never been big on it, but you know, I'm just traditional. I like ketchup.
Mayo Chup. MAYOCHUP. Saucy sauce, it's called, from Heinz. And I'm like, dude, it's not saucy sauce. That's like embalming fluid.
Couldn't just call it matchup? Come on.
Okay. All right.
That's smooth. Matchup.
Oh, I don't get it.
Mayo and ketchup.
Matchup?
Yeah.
That's awkward to say that.
And mayo chup is not?
But mayo chup feels kinky. You
Whoa.
Know, like almost like
Whoa.
you could use it as like
I'm lost now. Yeah, I just up. Yeah, it's you fine. Just went you left know. And you know I'm
you know,
you know.
What happened was anyway the okay. point is okay the point is that I almost threw up in my mouth when I saw that bottle today. And I sent my wife a picture of it because I'm a jerk. And I said, I got dinner covered. Don't worry about it. And I think she laughed because, like, you can never tell if somebody thinks something's funny over text. But, yeah. Yeah, it was funny, I thought.
Yeah.
It was
hysterical. I mean, and you're the comedian on the show, so you would know. I mean,
right.
You're funny, so you know funny.
And I'm funny. I know funny.
Yeah.
And I'm funny.
Yeah.
Looking.
We get it.
Anyway, so that was my gross grocery store.
Okay.
LaMelo Ball. Maybe LeVar Ball's not dumb like I thought. Yes. Well, okay. Yes, he is. Maybe he's not as dumb as I thought. So, you know, we told you on the show yesterday that LaMelo Ball enrolled himself in a prep school, which is to say a high school. So just a quick bit of history. He was going to Chino Hills High School. He was the number one rated point guard in the country. He dropped out of Chino Hills High School after his sticky-fingered brother got caught stealing in China. Ooh. While he was playing with UCLA, UCLA, basketball. So he got kicked off the team. Essentially kicked off the team because he withdrew himself after he got suspended. So it was a whole helicopter dad thing. But anyway, so they decided once Jello was off the UCLA team that LaMelo should be off the Chino Hills High School team. They withdrew him and categorized him as homeschooled. It's very important. Categorized him as homeschooled, and they took him to Lithuania. And they played a season in Lithuania. It was a disaster. Didn't go well. Then they did the JBA League. It was okay. It was largely a disaster. And then the JBA All-Stars toured Europe, and it was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Now this week we find out that LaMelo is going to enroll in a prep school and finish his high school. He'll be a senior at this prep school. And we find out that he could be eligible to go play at UCLA because he was not paid. He was not compensated for the JBA or his time in Lithuania, which you would think, if that's the story they're floating, that'd be pretty easy to check because, let's be honest, all the people in Lithuania hate the name Ball.
Yeah.
And hate those people and would love to screw them over if they were lying.
Yeah.
So it'd be pretty hard to spin the web that you were not compensated if you indeed were not compensated, you would hope.
Right.
And then the JBA, I would imagine that there's a way to cover that as well. Anyway, fast forward, if he plays well at the Spire Institute in Ohio, and nobody has any reason to think he won't, he's 6'7", and he, I think, is a pretty good basketball player. If he plays well there, and then he goes to UCLA, all is right in the world. He'll be drafted into the NBA. Like, everything will be good, right?
Yeah, correct. I think now, you know, the conversation has now shifted, right? Before all this happened, before Spire happened and he announced all this, the conversation was, hey, you know, he is not on track to get to the NBA. And this kid is growing. He's 6'7". He's got everything you can't teach, which is he should be in the NBA.
He's dunking on people now.
Yeah, like, I mean, he has the talent to get there. And so it was almost like a real shame. Like, it was awful. But now it turns out that there was a safety net. He was homeschooled. He wasn't paid. So I guess, you know,
he's been enrolled.
Yeah,
he has,
you know,
the,
like,
credits
they
to graduate.
They played their cards correctly so that if you know, it didn't quite work out or maybe something happened that they didn't anticipate, he could fall back and get back on track on the traditional path. And so I like it. I like that they did it if they did indeed do it because it's not set in stone that they did. But I like it.
It sounds like.
I mean, it's pretty locked in because he got accepted to the school and seems pretty good. But I'm just saying, if it comes out that he got paid and now everything just goes downhill, that's really going to hurt him. That's the only risk I see in this. Like, if to your point, like what you were saying about all those people in Lithuania who don't like him, if they're able to prove that he was paid and the Balls are lying about that, then that's going to be a real problem. But if it all goes over smooth, he's in a great place to get to the NBA.
Yeah, I say good for LaVar Ball.
And finally, you did something for your kid.
I haven't been able to say good for LaVar Ball ever. I say if this is all true and this all lines out and he winds up at UCLA, good for LaVar Ball.
Yeah, man.
You know, like, by the way, what did you think of Zion and, you know, R.J. Barrett?
Loved
and all the,
it, bro.
Duke is Duke.
We were having a conversation at my big-time recruiter job, you know, yesterday, you know, before the game and everything. And there was a real conversation about the fact that Duke is, you know, ranked below Kentucky. And they dominated Kentucky. And the thought was, well, you've got Zion, you've got Barrett, you've got all these guys, but you don't really have a deep bench. And so the question is, okay, well, can these five guys in your starting lineup carry you the whole year? Well, hell yes, they can, and they will.
Better stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you need to stay healthy, but if they stay healthy, they're going to dominate.
Does this make Duke more likable?
I think, and it's a great question, because now we're – does it make Duke more likable? Overtime's done a good job of promoting these guys. Young players coming up are now followed by a ton of people.
Yep.
So now that they went to Duke, the hype machine is there. The Zion hype machine has been coming for years now. We've been watching this guy on Instagram for how long?
Well, Barrett's really good too.
Yeah, and Barrett's there too, but I think Zion really was like an Instagram-like hit. He was like a star on Instagram. Anytime you saw Zion, you were like, uh-oh, here comes a dunk.
And he's got this freaky ability, and he is... But there's also this whole thing about, you know, being paid to go to Duke and, you know, what his dad was asking for, money, a house and a job. Like, I mean, it the whole thing's a little scary. But I think it's kind of crazy that all three of these guys wound up at Duke.
Yeah, it is.
It makes you wonder, you know,
what's the connection? How did they do it?
How did they do that? Because these three are pretty good. And by the way, so this whole Christian Dawkins thing, the FBI probe, he was found guilty. Mark Schlabaugh wrote a story tonight that just came out 15 minutes ago. And you know that Arizona fans are all over Schlabaugh because he got, according to Arizona fans, he got the story on DeAndre Ayton being the player that was offered money wrong, whatever. Schlabaugh wrote a story tonight, and here's how it reads. Federal authorities have given NCAA officials their approval to move ahead with an investigation of alleged rules violations that came to light during the first of three federal criminal trials involving a pay-for-play scheme and other corruption in college basketball, ESPN has confirmed. Evidence and testimony were presented that alleged potential rules violations involving coaches and players at Arizona, Creighton, Kansas, Louisville, LSU, NC State, Oklahoma State, Oregon, and other programs involved.
This has never been just a Duke thing or just an Arizona thing. It's everywhere. It's Louisville. It's Duke. It's Arizona. It's programs. Honestly, man, like at this point, in my opinion, it's every, like, until it's not, it's every program. Every program is violating the rules in some way or another. It's just a matter of who's been caught.
In emails that Christian Dawkins sent to his business partner, Munish Sood, he detailed payment plans for players at Alabama, Arizona, Cincinnati, Kentucky, Louisville, LSU, Miami, Mississippi State, Oregon, SC, Xavier, some of which were to begin September of 2017.
Bro.
Dawkins was among 10 men arrested by federal authorities in September 26, 2017. There is no evidence that any of the payments were actually made before his arrest or that any of the players had knowledge of the pay-for-play schemes. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exactly, sadly, it's exactly what we thought it was. I mean, it's tough because I have a hard time believing the players don't know anything about it. I mean, I really struggle with that idea, but I understand why it needs to be said, and you got to keep the player out of it, and it's not the player's fault that people are trying to bid on them and do all this stuff. So I get that, but it's really, it's almost an abomination we're at this point in college athletics.
Dawkins listed 19 quote-unquote prospective players who were either in college or high school. In the emails, Dawkins advised his partners that he had deals in place with three players who had recently turned pro. Of the 19 prospective players, Arizona's Raul Elkins is mentioned on that list. And there's a lot of other big names. De'Anthony Melton from USC. I mean, Trayvon Blewett from Xavier. Jared Vanderbilt from Kentucky. Troy Brown Jr. from Oregon. Colin Sexton from Alabama. Like, there are a lot of names on these lists.
Yeah.
And it's a real problem. According to the business plans that came to light today, Dawkins proposed making the following payments to players and or their families. Alabama's Colin Sexton gets $1,500 each month from September of 2017 until April of 2018, plus $23,000 in travel expenses for his family. His brother Jordan, who was also going to receive a four-year contract from the company worth a total of $170,000.
Yeah, man, that's ugly. I mean, that's just straight up ugly.
Colin Sexton is now a Cleveland Cavalier and struggling, by the way. I mean, this goes on and on. The records are amazing. The names, the detail in these records, it's quite sad because a lot of these kids probably won't feel any repercussions from this. It's just one of those things that, you know, like this Arizona story. Dawkins wrote that he planned to pay Arizona's Raul Alkins $2,500 per month from September to April, plus $30,000 in travel expenses for his family. He also wanted to give his cousin Rodney Labissiere a four-year deal to work as a manager. Rodney will get 25% of net income we generate from Raul, as well as additional players he brings in moving forward.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no getting away from this.
No. Nope.
I mean, everybody's
deep.
This is going to be ugly.
Yeah.
But here's the question. Is this bad for college basketball?
I don't think it's bad for it. I think it draws attention to it. I think it's everything. You know, if it comes out that people around Zion were paid and Duke paid for him, Duke paid for Barrett, that's not bad. That's good because those guys aren't going to be, like, nothing's going to happen to them. It's going to be, oh, is Coach K getting fired? Like, you know the drama that's going to go down with that. So you can make a case that it's actually decent for college basketball because it brings all this attention to it. You know, you're getting more eyes to the television.
Yeah, by the way, this is breaking as we're talking about this. This came out 15 minutes ago.
And by the way, it should be said, it's not bad for Arizona. It's not bad for Duke. It's bad for NCAA. It's bad for the organization, like the umbrella organization, that point of view. It's bad for
that. Does anybody care?
No, well, clearly not.
Will this cause this? There's really no repercussions.
Nope.
But I think what this is doing is it's laying the foundation and it's laying the legwork for the end of college basketball as we know it. And it's why G League contracts matter. It's why the ability to skip school, college altogether matters. It's why you have to, if you are college basketball, begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And that light is not good for you.
Yeah.
That's like the end of time's light. And I don't know how you fix it if you're the NCAA other than paying players. Because sadly, at this point, do these kids and their families even care about an education?
No.
Because it doesn't feel like they do.
No.
So it's an interesting story. And that update is huge from Schlabaugh. And he's been out in front on top of this story from day one. So, and he's taken a lot of heat for it. But it is what it is. Anyway, Tyson Chandler signs with the Lakers. He'll make his debut tonight. Do you like it?
Yeah, I love it. I think for the Lakers, it's the absolute right move. He brings veteran leadership on a team that has a lot of young guys. I know you've got LeBron, you've got Rondo, and all we've been hearing about is, you know, Rondo, the coach and the player. But I think you can never have enough veteran leadership. And so I think you bring Tyson in. He can come off the bench. I even make the case that he could push JaVale to start. I think, you know, Tyson has shown that he has the ability and the understanding to be an alley-oop guy. I mean, he doesn't need to score a ton of points for them, but he does need to rebound a lot, and he does need to bring toughness to the team because I think they do lack that a little bit. So I think I like it because he brings toughness, he brings the pick-and-roll game off the bench, and I think it won't hurt them in any way.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a great move for the Lakers. I don't see how in any way, shape, or form it's not a great move for the Lakers. Because this is, in my opinion, everybody makes a big deal about the Lakers not having three-point shooting. This is a bigger deal than three-point shooting. Because yeah. I actually think between Ingram, you know, Kuzma, Hart, Lonzo, LeBron, obviously, the three-point shooting will come. This is the problem, is that they're getting beat up inside and their interior defense has been so bad that this start that we've seen the Lakers get off to, I'm actually shocked how bad they are at times.
Well, I mean, if you know, the Raptors game was a pretty big kick in the nuts, if you know what I mean. They absolutely took it from the Raptors. I mean, Kawhi Kawhi's comments after the game, they opened up like a 30-point lead on him, and it absolutely comes down to the fact that they don't, you're right, they don't play interior defense. And so, yeah. Guy, if you get got by the first guy, there's nobody stopping you, and that's a huge problem.
Yeah, and getting Tyson Chandler, they play Minnesota tonight. It's Wednesday, November 7th. They play Minnesota tonight. I think that's a big deal. If you look up and down the NBA, are you surprised at all? What has stood out to you?
How awful the Wizards are. It's absolutely shocking. I mean, we can talk about how good the Nuggets are and all that. That's cool. That's going to cool off. They won't be that team, in my opinion. This Wizards team is trash, and you have mostly the same talent. Like, I don't know. You've got John Wall checked out. Like, I don't know what happened to this team, but if there was ever a time you needed to fire your head coach, now's the time. That
They're
team is
lost. They're giving up 120 points a game.
It's awful, and you're not scoring. You have no chemistry, clearly, which I don't even know how that's freaking possible because these guys have been together. It's not as though you're the Lakers and you've just brought a bunch of dudes together. Like, John Wall, Bradley Beal, and these guys have been together. So it's really surprising, and it's disappointing. I will say I like where the Blazers are at. I think CJ McCollum is having just an absolute ferocious start.
But can they sustain it? They're a good team. I just don't know that the Blazers can sustain it at the top. Like, I don't worry about Golden State. I think you're right on with Denver's going to come back to earth a little bit. I think Oklahoma City's going to find themselves. The Rockets will get better. The Jazz fans are not happy right now. The Jazz are going to figure it out.
Yeah.
I think the Lakers will figure it out. I think New Orleans potentially has some issues. They may figure it out. I don't know what on earth you do. If you are some of the teams that really stand out to me, like you said, Washington, I'm surprised on some level that Milwaukee is playing this well. They're 8-2. They're number two in the East. That's a little surprising. Markelle Fultz is a real problem for the Sixers. That shot is ugly again. I don't even know what you say about
regression.
That. The Celtics are not exactly, lighting the doors on fire. Like, I don't know.
The dynamic that Gordon is trying to figure out on the floor is interesting to me because he isn't, obviously he's not the number one option on the team, but he's one of your stud players. He's going to be there the whole year. And I think for him, it's been interesting because when he was on the Jazz, he was the number one. He was the guy, always had the ball. But I think now Jason Tatum has come such a long way that I almost feel like Gordon's struggling to even get touches.
Well, but he's not playing full-time minutes. I mean, he's not playing 30 minutes a night.
Right.
The leg is still an issue. Like, it's a slow progression. They don't need him to be an alpha male on that team. What's surprising is that Jaylen Brown, I don't know what I expected out of Jaylen Brown. I'm not seeing what I expected, if that makes sense. I'm not seeing the prolific player. He's shooting like 29% from three. Like, he needs to be better.
Yeah.
Right? I think they're trying to find each other, and I think they're trying to figure out, like, Marcus Smart is an interesting, like, you paid this guy, but how many minutes are you supposed to give him? Because obviously right now, I don't know how many people realize this, they're only playing Kyrie and Jason Tatum 30 minutes a night. Everybody else plays under 30 minutes a night. So you're playing a ton of guys, which we all knew they had depth, but I think it's messing with Rozier. I think Marcus Smart hasn't found his best form yet. Gordon, as you talked about, I think is going to be probably a 4-month rehab guy, just trying to get his game back. Jaylen struggled a little bit. I think it's very good for Al Horford.
Yeah.
But I think the Celtics' evolution, if this is, that might be the right way to say it, their evolution will be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first year where they're really going to have to figure out who is going to play the bulk of those minutes. Like, who are we as a team? Like, who is that? Because Rozier's got a lot to say about that, Like, guys like Terry Rozier have a ton to say about that. But I think when you look at the East, Philly is not ready yet, in my opinion. I mean, Ben Simmons, the shot is just not there. I'm sorry, but Fultz is, everybody knows what Fultz is. But I think overall what I'm most surprised about in the East is the Raptors and how good they are just coming right out of the gate. I really like that Kawhi Leonard has just taken over that team.
Are you surprised that defense is non-existent in the league right now? Because nobody, and this is the first time I can remember this, nobody in the NBA is holding their opponent under 100 points a game. Nobody.
Yeah.
And it's I mean, some of the best teams defensively, like the Grizzlies are 102, the Nuggets are 102. Like even the Jazz are giving up 110 points a game.
Yeah.
And the problem with the Jazz is like, what are you going to do with Rudy Gobert? He's not been good defensively.
Yeah.
I don't even know, like Jokic dominated him.
Yeah.
Like I don't even know how you explain their problems, but defense is so bad in the NBA right now. There are very few teams that are playing legit defense.
And I think when you look at the way the games are officiated, I think that's really playing a big portion of this debate, because if they let the defense be a bit more physical, if it wasn't so touchy and just so quick whistle style of officiating, I think the points per game would go down, right? Like you would see, hey, you know, we're going to let these guys bump a little bit. I mean, obviously you have to call some fouls and it's obviously a foul, but there are a lot of calls where we're sitting here watching the game and we're like, where's the foul on that? Like, the defender's going straight up. Like, if he can't go straight up, like, what are we even doing here? You know, so I just think maybe if they loosen up the officiating a little bit and teams put more of an emphasis on it, then yeah. But, I mean, we're definitely in an era where, you know, we're going to reward guys for scoring. Anybody who's getting paid, anybody who's scoring a ton is going to get paid. I mean, look at Zach LaVine. The guy is absolutely producing. I mean, that's an awful team, like absolutely garbage team, and Zach LaVine is an absolute standout. Look at Derrick Rose with, what was it, 51 or 53? We're praising him as him coming back. This is the old D. Rose. This is the guy that we all know and love, the MVP, the guy that should have taken over this decade and wasn't able to do it because his knees couldn't, you know, hang on with him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think in the NBA, it is about scoring. The best players score, the Durants, the Hardens, the LeBrons, they all score at a high level. Defense is not going to get you paid in this league. So why would anybody be good at defense?
Yeah, and you know, maybe that's your best point. I think, why am I is it a good or bad thing for the league today? It's not. I think it's much better for the NBA that you don't have the Spurs holding teams to 86 points a game.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's much better for the league, but we'll see. We'll get back to that, you know, as the season goes on. Yeah.
The Duke game. How many points did Duke score?
A lot.
110 points.
A lot.
That's a ton in college basketball. Like, that's a hell of a ton. Usually, 85? Maybe? Like, yeah. That's the usual college score. And we're talking about 110 points out of Duke? Now, I know Kentucky had a bad night, but my point here is that the guys coming up are getting better at scoring at a younger age. LaMelo Ball is going to be lighting dudes up, right? Like, he's that good. You have a ton of guys like that who are gifted scorers.
Yeah.
You know, and so let's not be surprised that the NBA is trending in a higher scoring, you know, direction. I mean, that's just what it is.
And I think that junk ball era is what's doing it. All right, before we get out of here, I do want to talk baseball, so we're going to be here like another 2 hours.
Okay, cool.
The Dodgers today picked up their option just about 25 minutes ago on Dave Roberts with the hopes of getting an extension done in the near future. And what this tells me is that they're having trouble getting an extension done, or they would have just done an extension instead of picked up the option. And they know that Dave would be in demand if they let him go.
Yeah.
Good move or bad move for Dave Roberts? I think it's a brilliant move not to get everything you can get from the Dodgers.
I mean, you got
to
leverage them as best you can. I mean, this is any player situation we've talked about. I mean, if you're going to be in demand and your current team wants to keep you, I mean, you got to leverage them for it. I mean, you have to. You don't have a choice. I mean,
how good of a manager is he? I hold him in very high regard.
Yeah, he's way up there. I think he did. They wouldn't have gotten as far as they did without him managing as well as he did. I mean, I think you look at, in my opinion, the Craig Counsell move of what he did with his lineup that day where he messed them up, he only did that because Dave Roberts got in his head with the moves that he made. And I'm not going to get into specifics and everything, but that's the point. Dave Roberts absolutely owned him mentally.
Playing Max Muncy at second base.
Yeah, like just doing weird things like, what the hell are you doing, Dave? Like, now I need to do
Dave,
this.
Come on, Dave.
Come on, Dave. What are you doing over there in the Dodger dugout?
What the hell, Dave?
This is Miller Park. We drink beer here and play all lefties. Come on.
Come on. Let's go to the Brat Stop. You forget this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's what... So, I just think he's way... And you even look at his performance in the World Series, and he did a great job in the World Series, in my opinion, too. And I think the Dodgers, again, are masterful choke artists, and I think they are.
Easy.
They absolutely are. Look at their performance in the postseason. I mean,
well, but are you surprised that Turner Ward got away from them? I'm really surprised by that. Some are not, but I mean, the transformation that we saw out of Yasiel Puig,
yeah,
I mean, incredible. And a lot of people were surmising that Turner Ward, the hitting coach for the Dodgers, got whacked, and he wound up in Cincinnati, by the way, because Manny Machado struggled for them. Well, I say Manny Machado's not taking anybody's advice.
No.
So here nor there. Another big story. Bryce Harper, we told you yesterday, turned down a huge extension. We didn't know how much. Well, maybe it wasn't so huge. $300 million, I say. That's a huge extension.
Yeah.
He turned it down. It had no opt-outs in it. He's hoping, I think, to get $400 million. Does he get it?
I think he probably does. And I think if I'm Bryce Harper, I do want one opt-out. I do want at least one opt-out because, you know, to get $400, you're going to have to sign like a 10-year contract.
Yeah.
You know, and so you need to have – anybody who's smart would say, yeah, I need an opt-out halfway through.
Yeah, give me – or no. Are you kidding me? Give me an opt-out after 3 years, not halfway through. I want opt-outs at 3, and I want opt-outs at 7.
You can't give them both. You got to make them commit. It's that simple.
Sure, but if I'm Scott Boras, I'm getting 2 opt-outs in that deal because I want to make sure that I'm maximizing his value because if in 5 years $400 million is a bargain, I want to make sure that my guy, if he's performing, is at the top of the league financially.
Yeah.
So I think it's a smart move, but I don't think there's any chance he goes back to Washington.
No.
No chance whatsoever. And finally, the frickin' Chicago Cubs. The Cubs today, Jed Hoyer, their general manager, said that the Cubs are in the trading mode, not the signing mode.
So you're saying it's going to be a long winter.
Winter is coming.
It's here, bro.
It is here. I guess I get it. They're right up against a luxury tax. Between options and arbitration, they're probably going to wind up paying the luxury tax. You're probably going to wind up trading and eating a good part of Tyler Chatwood's contract. You're probably going to wind up trading Kyle Schwarber. Oh, by the way, did I mention that Scott Boras said his client, Addison Russell, is likely staying with the Cubs? So are you not going to trade him? Like, I would think you would trade Addison Russell after the domestic violence thing. Like, can you bring Addison Russell back?
I wonder, like, you say that, but I also wonder how much did that hurt his value on the trade block?
Oh, some of it.
Like, I think it hurt his reputation, but to your point, I mean, he's one of the best defensive shortstops in the game. I mean, yeah, he had a down offensive year, but, I mean, last year he was solid. You know, he wasn't anything to be upset about. So I just think – if you're the Cubs, I mean, yeah, he should be a trade chip. You need to trade him. You need to trade Schwarber. And you need to see what you can do with the Hayward situation. You need to see if he has any value, like what you can do with that. Because if you can get rid of his contract and you can get rid of Russell and Schwarber, you're going to be in a much better place. But they, at the end of the day, they've got to add pitching. And Bryce Harper's not a pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's incredibly important that they trade and they're savvy about it, which Theo Epstein will be. But I think you have to make a decision on an Ian Happ. I think you have to make a decision on Jason Hayward or Kyle Schwarber. Like, who is it that you are willing to keep to make sure that you can bring back your bullpen, to make sure that you can insulate yourself against Yu Darvish?
Yeah.
Because you already picked up the option on Cole Hamels. And you are pretty much locked into Lester, Hendricks, Quintana, and Hamels.
Yeah.
You probably don't have a fifth guy outside of Mike Montgomery who you really don't want starting. So are you willing to let go of a guy like an Albert Almora? Are you willing to not bring back Victor Caratini, Tommy La Stella? What do you do with David Bodie? Like, yeah, there's all these moves you have to make. But I start by trading an Ian Happ. I start by trying to move a guy like a Jason Hayward, a Kyle Schwarber who's got value. Because you need to clear space. If you're serious about winning the World Series a year from now, you better have gone out and picked up a bat and at least one arm.
Yeah.
At least one starting pitcher, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because I think there's no chance Yu Darvish makes a meaningful contribution this year. None whatsoever.
Yeah, it's the Yu Darvish situation is just impossible. I mean, you made the wrong decision, and I understand that happens sometimes. But flipping the bird to Arrieta was not a good choice. And you're exactly right. They need to move this talent, and they need to get back to a place where they've got a good farm system of guys who are being developed, and you can keep the train moving along here. You know, and I don't know about them. I highly doubt they win the World Series this next season. 2 years from now, I think that's a real discussion. You would just have to have a dynamite offseason to do that, in my opinion.
Well, and he's capable of it. He's capable of it. Why, I mean, like, why would you...
I'm not saying he's not capable of it, but what I am saying is you would need to go out and get a true ace. You would need, like a young talent I'm referring to is like a Walker Buehler-esque talent. Like, somebody like that who's young, who you can get in the long term as well. Like, you can sign him for a little while and do good things with, because Lester is going to age out. I mean, what has he got? Maybe 3 seasons left?
Yeah.
Like, he's almost done.
Yeah, and they have some pitching. It's not going to be ready. It's not nearly going to be ready. I mean, it's going to take time to get that, but we'll see. The Cubs and Theo Epstein have historically bought their pitching, which is why they're in the position that they're in.
Yeah.
Because you made a huge mistake with Yu Darvish.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. I generally am probably too, I know you may find this hard to believe, I'm probably too emotionally invested in the Chicago Cubs. I know you may find that hard to believe.
Right.
So we probably should give them a rest. Tomorrow is Thursday on the show. Are we finally going to talk some Notre Dame, Michigan tomorrow?
Yeah, bro.
You don't like college football. You are not a college football guy.
You know, it is what it is.
All right. Well, there you have it. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Find us online, themontyshow.com. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.